Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live at 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm as well. A lot going on, a lot to talk about today, including winter weather hitting the United States. Over the weekend, also a wave of terrorism across the world. Pretty bad news there. We'll have some details. And also, Netanyahu, he wants to work with Mr. Trump on the Iran deal. We'll see what comes of that, but they're talking about working together. That and more details on the way. This Monday edition, Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. Send in any emails you have, comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. Have a good weekend, Grant.
It's pretty good. More busy than usual.
Yeah. There was your Bills lost, so sorry about that.
I just was watching it, and I called them trash probably a couple hundred times. I'm like, you guys are trash. You guys are trash.
That's Todd Gurley, the running back for the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams have lost quite a few games. They're not very good. He was asked after the game how he felt about the team or whatever, and he said, their offense looks like a middle school team.
Wow.
So he was mad at his team, too. This is a time of the year when all the frustrations are boiling over.
Oh, it sets in that the team's going nowhere, won't make the playoffs, and that's when everyone gets upset.
Everyone checks out for the year and starts thinking about vacations or something like that, I guess, or trying not to get injured, I suppose, different things. My Packers won, though, so for the Packer fans out there.
Congratulations.
Congratulations to us. And it was cold up there in Lambeau. It was only, 23 or 4 degrees, so Seattle apparently couldn't handle the cold.
Yeah, that's how a lot of teams are if they're not used to playing in extreme freezing cold. Seattle, for example, has a roof that they can close over their field whenever it does get too cold, and so it's hard for them to adjust to those rough climates.
The ball gets harder, mm-hmm. and of course your hands are cold and you get hit with it, and it's different. Things change a little bit, so I don't know how much it affects people. Maybe it does. They always say it does, but I imagine it could to some extent. There is winter weather in the U.S., of course, over the weekend and today. The storm system kind of moved through the Midwest, and now it's heading to the East Coast. They say canceled flights, snow, and rain lead to misery for millions of Americans. So if you're traveling today and you're heading through those airports, you might have some delays. So that's why you can listen to us. Give yourself something to do. It's better than nothing. It's something.
I hope it's better than nothing.
Nothing else we can do for you. They say blankets of snow and driving rain forced hundreds of flight delays. They have it written here, depays, but I think they meant delays.
Probably.
I don't know what a depay is. Can you depay me?
And please don't, actually. That's a terrible idea.
Maybe that's a new thing. If they delay your flight, they pay you back. We depay you.
Oh, okay. I thought it meant, like, instead of paying me, don't pay me.
It's a typo, so I'm just making stuff up here. Flight delays is what they meant, I believe. And cancellations are made for messy morning commutes on Monday as a storm that dumped several inches of snow on the Midwest made its way east. The National Weather Service issued winter storm and winter weather advisories for parts of the Great Lakes and the Northeast overnight, and that could affect millions of Americans in those regions. Of course, we have a lot listening there online at kpcg.fm. So you might be in a winter wonderland. We're not. But you may be. We're cold, though. We don't have any of that nice snow. It says snow fell throughout northern New England Monday. They had traffic jams, of course, snow-packed roads, and some schools were canceled, which is always exciting for the kids. I'd rather have it canceled than postponed. Postponed is nice, too. Get a little break, but cancel it.
A lot of years, it just seems like it comes out of nowhere for the Northeast. My only point of reference, really, is watching the Bills games. And one week, it's completely sunny and 70 degrees, and the next week, it's dumping snow.
You know, my favorite games are when it's snowing. those are fun to watch, and they can't see where the boundaries are, and everyone's slipping. Like, that's when it's really fun,
I think. Doesn't it seem pretty sudden, though? I mean, yeah. from 1 week to the next, it's like, oh, you can tell it's December now.
Yeah, it changes. It can change. Well, it's global warming, too.
Oh, right.
So you never know what's going to happen. So anyway, they've got some snow heading up there and some ice. It's a slap of reality, they say, after a mild November. That's according to the National Weather Service meteorologist Dave Schmidt in La Crosse, Wisconsin. The National Weather Service forecast snow across Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine up to a foot could hit parts of southern Vermont, and at least several inches has already fallen. So they'll be happy if, you know, they got their ski slopes. They want to go skiing. That's always exciting. So don't like it for traveling, but you like it for all the fun winter activities.
Yeah, if you don't have anything too pressing going on, which sadly most people usually do.
Well, you know, I know back up in Wisconsin, one of the big industries was snowmobiling. And, you know, some years you just don't get a lot of snow. And you got that $6,000 snowmobile or more, whatever you paid for it, sitting out in your garage. You can't do anything with it.
Is it not possible to ride it otherwise?
Sometimes they try to make snow. And, I mean, you could drive it around in your lawn, but it wouldn't be good for it.
Would it tear up the grass pretty badly without any snow there?
It's got that track on the back.
Oh, right.
And it pushes, got the skis on the front. So, yeah, anyway, people really, really, it's a big industry. They like to do that and put some money into it, and then if you don't get any snow. So,
is it street legal?
depends on how big your town is, probably. No, they have trails. They have quite an extensive miles and miles of trails that people go on. Wow. The danger, though, is that people get reckless, and what they do is a lot of times you'll see it, like 30 snowmobiles lined up outside of a bar. Right, so they go in and they'll have a good time in the bar, and then they get on their snowmobile. And so people do sadly get into wrecks, and I mean, you're going pretty fast. A lot of deaths happen, thrown off, hit a tree, hit somebody else. Even though it's a trail, I mean, there are rules to it, and there are stop signs, and you know, trails cross, and so you got to be careful. So there are some negatives that come from it.
So basically, it's a good idea not to drink and drive, no matter where you're driving or what you're driving.
Yeah, for sure. So, but that is a big industry there. Anywhere where you've got snow, you got your skiing, your snowmobiling, et cetera, et cetera. You were talking about ice fishing the other day that you were fascinated by that. You've never done it?
Up in Alaska?
Yeah.
No, I've never done that.
Yeah, that's really big up in the northern regions as well. And yeah, you just put out a little shack usually and sit in there and just drop your line in and then watch TV and do something else. Get away from it all. I mean, you know, the ice freezes so thick, you can drive out a, you know, truck and put up a whole thing out there. So you have to wait until it's frozen enough. There's always people that sometimes will make that mistake, go a little early, and that's a problem. You find out quickly you went too early.
So if the ice is that thick, how exactly do they make the hole to get into the water?
They have a drill like a big ice auger that goes down in there.
Didn't even realize they had to go that hard with it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you got to go way down there. So anyway, yeah, it's kind of it's the pros and cons of winter. You've got to deal with the bad, but there's some good that comes with it too. Here's another headline from over the weekend. This is kind of interesting. Ties into, I guess, sort of a trend we've seen with police officers, although this was a line-of-duty incident. Overnight, two Central Georgia police officers were shot and wounded while serving a warrant. The officers were shot during a multi-jurisdictional drug task force operation at a home there in the Georgia area. The eight-member team knocked on the door three times and announced themselves. There was no answer. Eventually, the police knocked the door down, and that's when an occupant in one room fired at least one round, and it struck two officers. So this can happen, of course. But what I find interesting about it is it's a drug-related situation, and those get bad fast. And it just flies in the face of that idea that you can release, as they call them, low-level drug offenders from jail. There's been a big initiative to do that. But low-level offenders usually become high-level offenders at some point, and then things like this happen. And you got to stop it at the lowest level. You can't let it accelerate and let people get out of jail for free and say, well, it's a low-level offense, because it becomes a bigger deal.
Yeah, and a big discussion now is about leniency and clemency and lightening some of these laws. But what seems to be happening is that when people get a second chance, their human nature tells them to maybe push the boundary a little bit further than they did the last time, and then something worse happens.
Right. That's sadly the way it goes. If you let somebody get away without much of a penalty, then usually they repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a bad deal there. I think it was last week there was some police officers shot. Well, it was in Georgia too, wasn't it?
Somewhere. I feel like every week we're hearing a few stories about this still.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's again, this is a line of duty type situation, but still, it does highlight the stress that they're under. Anytime you go to a situation like this, a drug bust of some kind, life's on the line. You don't know what's going
to
happen.
And that makes it easy to understand why, when there are some of these more controversial instances where people are second-guessing whether or not they should have taken the shot, well, look how their brothers and sisters are getting shot all the time in the line of duty. It's a stressful job, and you can understand why maybe there could be a mistake from time to time.
Yeah, and sometimes, too, I think some of the people that have been in the news for being shot, if you look at their history, they've got a little bit of a rap sheet, or sometimes a really long one. The police officers know who they are. They've had encounters with them before. All of that is also playing into what happens there on that 30-second edited cell phone video.
Yeah, that tends to be the much bigger issue. In far more of those cases, the person being shot is not the innocent victim that the media portrays him to be. But there are also then a few who that are legitimate. But the thing is, we're blurring the lines to where we make it seem like any time a police officer shoots anybody else, it is a wrongful deed, and it's not always that the case that way.
There's usually a lot more to the story than what you see on the little blurb.
You know what people are also saying, too, is that people being able to take videos themselves and post them on social media is actually helping inform everybody more. I would think it's the exact opposite, because people have editing capabilities. They can edit the video down to exactly what they want you to see and in turn be very deceptive.
Right. It would be very easy to go up to somebody, instigate something, film their reaction, and then put it up on the internet and say, oh, look what they did, mm-hmm. and not give the whole story as to what happened. So, yeah, it is interesting when you do give people, the general public, I guess, the ability to sort of be the news. Sometimes it can be good. Sometimes it can be bad, though.
Because then people can choose, instead of going to the news and looking up statistics of police shootings and how it has played out on the larger scale, they can look at one specific video of one specific instance, which really is about 30 seconds long, and they'll judge based on that instead of the big picture.
Yeah. So that's another tragedy there over the weekend. I think they're just injured at this point. I didn't see the details, but that was overnight in Georgia. Two officers shot there serving a warrant. Over the weekend, there was a wave of terrorism. And it was not here in the U.S., but still a pretty big deal. A wave of terror came to Istanbul, Cairo, and Mogadishu. These are three different attacks. First one was in Istanbul, Turkey. That was late Saturday night, heavily attended soccer game. And so a lot of times these terrorist attacks occur places like that, a soccer game. People are there having fun and trying to have some entertainment, and they know it's a highly condensed area with a lot of people. Two blasts about a mile apart killed at least 44 people, most of them police officers, and wounded 150. A remote control detonated car bomb in the first explosion, and a suicide bomber caused the second. And we've seen that before, where one goes off and then people run and then another thing goes off, and you wouldn't know where to go or what to do. The panic would be crazy.
That's right, and it seems like a lot of prime targets internationally for these terrorist attacks have been big stadiums. I'm kind of surprised that hasn't happened more here in America, but overseas, that's what they choose the most because there's tens of thousands of people there at the same time.
Yeah, I think we've all probably had that same thought. If you've ever been to a game of any kind, a professional game especially, it's packed and it's wall-to-wall people. You look around and there's exits and things, but I mean, if there was some sort of a panic, that the panic would be worse probably than anything else.
Yeah, the stampede to the exits would be extremely life-threatening. I would say probably the events here would have overall better security than most places, but even still, it's not going to stop every attempt, I don't think.
Yeah, we've been fortunate so far to not really see anything like that in the U.S. that I can recall. Nothing at a major event like that. The second attack happened in Cairo, Egypt. It was during Sunday morning mass at Cairo's main Coptic house of worship. Christians over there, I guess, as they would call themselves, have endured a lot of attacks, and that's something that's not talked about as much when we talk about the refugee problems. And that happened at St. Mark's Coptic Orthodox Cathedral. A bomb ripped through a section of the church for women, killing at least 25 and injuring dozens more. And then finally, Mogadishu, Somalia. That was Sunday about 7:30 a.m. in Mogadishu. That's the nation's largest city. It's also the capital. A car bomb filled with explosives rammed into the main entrance of a port, killing at least 20 people and injuring 15, most of whom were port employees and pedestrians. So when somebody's just got it in their mind to cause destruction and they don't care if they die, it's kind of hard to stop it.
Yeah, it's all actually in a pretty small region over there. Turkey, which is just to the north of Africa, and then those other two spots are both in northeast Africa as well. It kind of makes you wonder if maybe those three attacks were coordinated somehow.
There's all kinds of groups over there that are involved in terrorism, and they all have a certain relation, you know, and it's been a bad deal. Been going on for quite some time, decades really, but it seems like it's ramped up here more lately. So we'll see how it goes with that. But, you know, when it's international and it's particularly in, say, a country like Turkey or Egypt or Somalia, it gets attention, but not the same type of attention. It's almost like people sort of expect it to happen.
That's true. And my father was mentioning the other night how really Islamic terrorism didn't exactly exist until the last few decades. It's hard to imagine a time when that wasn't in the news all the time. I mean, since I've been born, it's always been there. But right before that, it didn't even hardly exist.
Yeah, it's been there for years, recently. And I guess, you know, there were a few attacks. You could point to different decades and say, well, there was one. And, you know, there's a few in the 80s and so forth. Obviously, the big event was 9/11. And then that really got it into everybody's minds. Because a lot of times these things would have happened, but they'd happen in remote areas. And you think, well, it's tribal or it's, you know, something there. But 9/11 showed we could be hit here. And it's interesting because time moves on. And there's a whole new generation that was born post 9/11. They know of it as a historical event. They don't have a personal memory of it. And it's interesting how time moves like that.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, now terrorism is just, it just seems like it's commonplace. And it can be easy to be desensitized to it whenever they're taking these events are taking place so far away from us, but it's happening every day pretty much, and people are just being slaughtered because of really a perverted way of thinking that their Messiah will come if they perpetrate these attacks.
It's religious ideology, and people don't want to talk about it like it's a religious war, but it is. That's what the terrorism is for. Moving on to some other news, a little less grim, hopefully. You have Uber drivers, of course, and one of the things about Uber drivers is how much money do they actually make? It kind of depends, I guess. But this one lady, she had the Uber ride of all time. This apparently is the longest Uber ride in history. It just happened. A Brooklyn woman, she needed to get home to see her boyfriend, and she hailed an Uber for the trip. So I guess that's a love and devotion. Maybe it was an emergency. I don't know. She had to get to see him. 400 miles. It was a 400-mile trip with an Uber driver. It took 7 hours and 42 minutes, and the cost was $294.09, which I thought, well, it's not actually not horrible. About a quarter of what a New York City taxi on the meter would have charged. So by going with Uber, saved quite a bit. It is believed to be the longest ride in the history of the service so far. And the passenger slept the entire way. It was the driver, 64-year-old, it was the first time driving within New York City. She didn't hang around to sightsee. Can you imagine? 64 and you got to take somebody all the way to New York City? That's a bit of a drive.
Poor driver.
She just dropped off her passenger, turned around, and drove home, arriving at 3:45 a.m., her take for this epic journey, after gas and tolls, she made about $9 an hour.
Oh.
It's not good. You can make $9 an hour doing things less taxing, I think.
Less taxiing.
Less taxiing. You know, I saw, I was thinking about people, I don't know what everybody gets paid for their different jobs, but yesterday we were in town. It was cold yesterday, windy, and there was a store, some sort of going out of business sale. It's funny because it's that store, that location always goes out of business. There's just different businesses. I was thinking they should just call the place Going Out of Business. Like, that should be the name of the store. But anyway, they hired one of their, I think it was a teenager guy, and to hold like the sign and kind of dance around and, you know, get you to pay attention to it. And it was so cold, and I thought, boy, that'd be miserable out there. He was really working it, though, and I thought, I wonder what he's getting paid. Is he getting paid more than $9 an hour? Is it better to hold the sign or drive the Uber? I'm not sure.
Probably to drive the Uber. Be out of the cold a little bit. Not have to make a fool of yourself by dancing so much in front of people.
Well, it's so funny how you see, like, we mentioned this the other week. It's right there where there's some panhandlers, too. So on one side of the street, you got the guy just holding the sign, begging for money. And on the other side of the street, there's another guy holding a sign, getting paid, though, to hold the sign. I thought, well, why don't you just go across the street, hold the sign.
Get that job.
You guys could split it.
Exactly. 50.
You're out here anyway. You already got a sign. Just go across the street.
The thing is, who's getting paid more? The panhandler who is getting, you know, gifts all day, or the person who's working for that minimum wage?
That's true. We saw a guy yesterday holding a sign. And, of course, I was got to tell the kids, stop staring. You know, they just want to stare at whatever's out there. And this guy's holding a sign, and my son astutely pointed out, his sign said, I need winter gear, but he was wearing a winter coat. What gear? Is skiing? Is he going to go skiing this weekend, this winter? He had a big coat on.
Just wanted a wardrobe.
Wanted a new coat, maybe. I'm not sure. But I thought, well, so he's asking for money for the gear, or is he asking for gear? Like, here's a boot, you know, throw a boot at him.
Yeah, that's a tough sign to try to decipher there. It's funny, too, because kids will stare at a thing like that, and then when you're older, you'd rather look anywhere else except for at that guy.
Exactly. Yeah, it's uncomfortable for everyone involved. At least for me it is. If you're an AT&T customer, you might get some money back. Or if you have been an AT&T customer in the past, it says AT&T customers are going to get an $88 million refund. Sadly, not each. It'll be split in refunds for bogus charges. They wouldn't give you a bogus charge, would they? Apparently they did. It says current AT&T customers can expect to see a credit on their bill within the next 75 days, while the more than 300,000 customers who jumped ship from AT&T since the so-called cramming scheme, that sounds like a college student trying to get ready for tests, will be getting a check. They say all told, they will dole out more than $88 million in refunds, or the most money ever returned to consumers in a mobile cramming case. This particular cramming case dates back to 2014 when AT&T settled charges that it added unauthorized charges to its customers' bills for things like ringtones, wallpaper, and text messages with horoscopes, flirting tips, celebrity gossip, and more. Well, this sounds well worth the money. Most of these charges were $9.99 per month, though in some cases they were as high as $60 per month. In many cases, customers did not agree to these charges, and they were hidden in the phone bills. Those phone bills are hard to decipher. It's like a book.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of numbers and things, taxes. So anyway, if you have been an AT&T customer, or if you are, you might get something. I'm not sure how they're going to dole it out exactly, but that'd be nice. Get a little check in the mail. I'll probably just throw it away. I think it's junk mail.
Oh, no.
Because in a lot of junk mail now, they send it so it looks like a check. Mm-hmm. They have it in those same sort of envelopes because they're trying to get you to, you know, look at their stuff. So, yeah, you got to pay attention. You might be getting a check.
Yeah, that would be pretty amazing. I used to be an AT&T customer as well, so it just depends on the time frame, I guess.
Yeah, but, 2014.
Yeah, there was a spot on TV that I saw not too long ago, and the person was asking, how exactly do we know what we're getting charged for on our bills? And basically the other person answered, well, it's really impossible to tell. I mean, who knows what all those different technical terms mean that we're actually getting charged for?
That's right, and I know what their plan is, I'm sure. They send you a bill that seems a little too much. It's a little confusing. So you call to try to figure it out, and then they put you on hold for about 45 minutes, just hoping you'll hang up in frustration and pay your bill.
Yeah.
They do it all the time. And then finally you get on with somebody who's in another country, and it's hard to understand the accent. And then typically what they tell you is they just look at the bill with you and then like read the same thing you're reading, and they're like, well, it says right there. And my response is always, I know what it says right there. I read it. I want you to tell me what that means.
Yeah.
But they don't know what it means. Yeah. So it's you kind of get into that like circle where you can't get to the person that could actually help you with your problem.
Yeah, it seems like it could be set up that way. And I've had that issue with several phone companies where the bill's like $100 or $150 more than it should have been. And it's so hard to get to the bottom of it that you just put your head down and pay it and hope it doesn't happen again the next month.
It's a lot of flirting tips.
I know. I must have really been stocking up on those.
It worked. You got married, though.
That's true.
It was well worth it.
Worth the hefty price.
Thank you, AT&T, solving all my problems. So we'll see if we get a check there. Imagine they'll just distribute it evenly. I'm not sure. A couple bucks, maybe 10 bucks. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows how many $9.99 charges a certain person could accrue over the course of a year or two. Maybe it could be up to a couple $100.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Sometimes you get that random thing in the mail that says, hey, there's a class action lawsuit. Do you want to be part of this? And, you know, because you bought this product 5 years ago or something. And I don't, most cases, I don't bother with it. I don't really want to get in the mix. But I just want to check the box that says, I don't want to be involved, but send me money if you get any.
Right.
Is there a box for that? That's the one.
That would be ideal. I've had a couple of those as well where it just seems so complicated to get involved, to get money back, that is it even worth the time?
Yeah, and I always have a fear that somehow I'll get really involved. Like, they'll say, well, you know, you're going to have to stand trial. I'm like, now what? No, I don't even remember this product.
You check the box, though.
I don't want any trouble. Have drones showing up at my house. I don't want any trouble. Here's an interesting story. There might be nothing to this, but there might be something to it. This is from The Sun. You could say that about every article that comes from The Sun. It says the lost city of Antarctica. They think they found maybe a city that was kind of buried under the ice. City might be an over-exaggeration, but it's interesting. There's always a fascination with that area. Any place up there where it's very cold and people can't get to, they want to get there and find out if they can live there, if they can take over that part of the world, I guess. So they said there's this lost city of Antarctica. There's lots of conspiracy theories about a lost city or civilization in Antarctica from over the years. Some people think it's Atlantis, buried under the ice. There's this thought that maybe it wasn't always as icy as it is today. Who knows? Anyway, this is the interesting part. They say earlier this year, photos from NASA appeared to reveal traces of a human settlement underneath the ice. The pictures taken using remote sensing photography for NASA's Operation Ice Bridge mission to Antarctica show what online sleuths believe could be a city. So they're doing this now where there are more high-quality photos from space. And you look down and sometimes you're like, hey, what's that? You know, and that has helped with some archaeology where they've seen outlines of things. So they don't know for sure what this is. Some people think that World War II Germany was involved in activity in the Antarctic. In October, explorers discovered the remnants of a secret Nazi base hidden deep in the Arctic, just 600 miles from the North Pole. So there was some proof that they did some things in some areas. So there's an idea that there might be something out there. So they don't know, but there's something that looks like it could be under the ice.
Who's there now? Basically a couple scientists at an outpost possibly, and maybe that's it?
Yeah, it seems like it. It doesn't seem like you always have research teams kind of going up there or different places. I'm actually reading a book now about when they were trying to run some missions up into some of those areas in the late 1800s. So they wanted to find different passages, and there was a real desire to get up there and see if they could do something with that landmass or those different areas, and. In most cases, they all ended up dying. It didn't work.
Ernest Shackleton, was he one of those guys?
He was one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was hard. Now, of course, the technology is better. You can get up there and get back, but can you do anything there? So cold, so, you know, uninhabitable. But they're thinking maybe somebody tried something and it's buried in the ice up there.
Yeah, it seems hard to believe that a certain part of this earth could be completely uninhabitable. So it'd be interesting to see if maybe some people did find a way to make it sustainable somehow. Obviously, certain animals live in that area, so they could be killed for food.
Ice monsters.
Exactly.
Aliens. And aliens. So, of course, this next one's happening. This is from Heat Street. Have you ever heard of Chicago's famed Second City, the comedy theater club that they have up there?
I think so.
There's been quite a few people that have gotten their start there and then have moved on to other shows like Saturday Night Live and other more popular shows, I guess, and then made their way into movies and so forth, including John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Stephen Colbert, and a few others that have got their start there. But now and they've always kind of, I guess, had a reputation for, it's a comedy club, anything goes, you know, they can talk about whatever. Not anymore. They are going to put the clamps down. They want it to be a safe space. They say it's supposed to be no jokes are off limits, except for now they're creating a safe space from what they call Trumpism. Over the weekend, signs went up on Second City's doors warning that the company, quote, has a zero-tolerance policy and does not allow hate speech of any kind, whether it's directed toward our artists, employees, or patrons, and that anyone verbalizing any homophobic, misogynistic, I can never say that word, xenophobic, racist, or prejudiced comments will be asked to leave. It just says verbalizing. I guess you could take a sign with you or do something different.
They can't stop our thoughts.
But it's just kind of, it's just ironic, if nothing else, that this is a place that they've said all kinds of things over the years, and it's pretty inappropriate things, I'm sure. And now they're trying to create this safe space. But, how do you do that? How do you allow for jokes but not certain types of jokes? They say that their efforts include stylized programs now designed to help their audiences, quote, confront racism, which includes a skit making fun of Donald Trump's family. So I guess it's not a safe space if you're Donald Trump's family.
Right. Apparently you can't be a racist or any other type of bigot toward the Trumps.
It's interesting to see how they try to interject their politics. Inject those into what they're doing, but anyway, I've never been there. I won't be there. But for those who like to go to the Second City, be careful, beware.
Yeah, comedy used to be the realm where really anything goes, and you could easily say that some of those things need to be less crass than they are. But to say that we need to walk on eggshells and be afraid of offending different groups of people in comedy, really, no one is off limits, it would seem.
Yeah, and they're not stopping. They're not saying don't make fun of people, they're just saying don't make fun of some people. Mm-hmm. So that gets to be sort of they're prejudiced against different groups.
If you play that out all the way, though, certain people are going to get upset that they're still being made fun of while others aren't, and then you can't make fun of anybody, and then comedy dies.
Yes, the death of comedy at Second City. That'll be a new program. The Kia David program is coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Two programs today. Make sure you listen for those, and also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. Talking today about the work of God and how a lot of people are involved in it. It's not just a one-man show, as he says. It takes quite a few people. He has some good radio quotes from Mr. Armstrong over the years, talking about how he needed the support of the coworkers and those helping him, and looks at some new Testament history there as well about the people helping Paul and others. So make sure you listen for that program coming up here in a bit on KPCG. And if you can't catch it live or the replay, you can always get the archive at kpcg.fm. This is Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us on this Monday edition. You can get a hold of us, comments at kpcg.fm. Also follow us on Twitter at kpcg.fm. This is 101.3 KPCG. We have a live stream at kpcg.fm. And I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondeau stopping by again today. How you doing, Abraham?
Doing pretty well.
You almost look like you got a little suntan. Windburn?
Must have been windburn.
You're outside.
Yeah. I'm in a flag football league here on the college campus, and the forecast said it was going to go up to 60 degrees yesterday, but my skin is proof that it did not.
It was cold. It was a little warmer maybe towards noon, and then in the afternoon that wind really got cold. Had quite a bite. It was one of those really strange days where we were doing some errands around town, and so I had, kind of like a sweatshirt on. And it was cold outside, but it was hot in the stores. You can never get it right.
Yep.
So, first world problems. But anyway, couldn't quite get the temperature right.
Didn't it get close to 60 in the evening yesterday as well? Like later, after the sun had already set for some reason?
Yeah, that could be. I didn't check the...
Yeah, I wasn't outside at that point. But yeah, it was just a big joke by Mother Nature on us playing out there yesterday.
Teasing you, blowing the wind at you. If you guys ever go to a hotel, here are five things that they say you should avoid touching, which is good luck. You have to touch most of these things. But these are the five dirtiest things in a hotel. If you stay at hotels a lot and you don't want to hear this, plug your ears. The dirtiest thing is the remote control. But how are you not going to touch the remote control? That's impossible.
I'll just tell my wife to change the channels for me.
There you go. The second thing is the phone. Now, you could avoid touching that. Everyone's got their own phone, I guess, unless you want to call the front desk or something. Number three, the bathroom counter. Dirty area. Kind of have to touch it, I guess. sort of.
Yeah.
Four, they say the comforter. How are you not going to touch the comforter? You're going to hover above the bed? You're going to sleep on the floor?
Is sleeping on the floor really a more clean option?
I wouldn't think so. Yeah, the comforter, they say, is dirty. What about the sheets, though? I guess they wash the sheets more often than they would the comforter. That's probably why.
Probably.
How do you wash a comforter? Sort of. I've never had to deal with it in my whole life.
Take it to the, a lot of times you got to take it into like the laundromat because it's big and you got to get it one of the big industrial machines.
Or like dry cleaning too.
Yeah.
That depends. I did see a story though where they have a self-making comforter or actually makes itself on your bed.
Wow.
Like in the morning when you wake up and yep. It's the bed's disheveled, it will make the bed.
Yep. It will flop back into place.
Really?
So it's alive.
Yeah, it's basically you have to, I think it's mounted like to the bottom of the bed, so it always has like a starting point. But you can throw the covers wherever you want and they'll just like roll up and flatten out.
That's what we've come to now. Can't even make our own beds. We have to get the self-making comforter.
Yes.
Yeah. Huh. I don't know. I don't like that idea. Because I have a feeling it would make itself while I was in there. Right. I'd be like pinned. And I couldn't get out of the comfort.
That's the plan.
That's yeah.
Probably why they did it.
You get it from somebody that you don't get along with real well as a gift. You're like, now why did they give me this?
Well, I think just small animals or children playing on the bed could get... I mean, it's not strong enough to trap you in there, but...
That's what they claim.
Who knows?
The fifth thing they say you shouldn't touch, and I very rarely ever touch this, is the ice bucket. The ice bucket's dirty. So, I mean, occasionally, I suppose, but... I don't know. Just don't end up touching the ice bucket.
Yeah, we just would always wash it in the dirty kitchen or bathroom counter.
Dry it with the comforter?
Yeah.
Drop the remote in there for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, I've done all five. I'm a disgusting beast. Yeah, hotels. I prefer just not to think about it because...
Yeah,
sure,
who cares? It's fine.
Just get in
deal
there.
With it.
Get in there, take care of sleeping or whatever you're doing. Watch a little TV and get out of there.
Yeah,
it's funny how people take tests of those things to see what's the most dirty.
Yeah,
those people are probably the germaphobes, the most paranoid people in life.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you can kind of
they know too much.
It's every. I mean, the germs are around. You know.
Well, it's probably just this is dirty in their own house. I mean, yeah. To be honest,
but it's your dirt.
Exactly. So
more tolerable that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's all scalable. It's easier to catch bad things at hotels, but. There's plenty of dirty houses out there where there's bacteria and that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, that should be what happens. If you complain at a hotel about it being dirty, they should come check your house and see.
Yeah.
See. Abraham, you've got a story from the National Post for us. Beijing expressing serious concern about Trump after he said the U.S. is not bound by one China policy. Maybe you could start by explaining the one China policy to us.
Sure. So the one China policy... That basically harkens back to identifying which China we recognize as a state. And this all goes back to the Chinese Civil War and following World War II between Mao and Chiang Kai-shek.
Great job with those names, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, that was all faith there. Mao, he's obviously the communist leader, and he was fighting against Chiang Kai-shek. He was the democratic leader. He was the leader FDR, Churchill, dealt with during World War II. They were allied with us fighting against Japan. And after World War II ended, there was a civil war. The communists won. And the remnants of the Democratic Army fled to Taiwan. And that's what the Taiwan nation is today. It's the remnants of Chiang Kai-shek's army and the people who followed him. And so mainland China believes Taiwan is a renegade country. It's a country still full of rebels. Well, those people in Taiwan claim they're the real China, and the communists took over what was China beforehand, the U.S. ally. And so since 1950, when Mao took power, the U.S. has really struggled with how do we approach this, because Taiwan is our ally naturally. They're a democracy. We supported them. They were our ally in World War II. But China's this huge power. They're communists, so they're anti-Western. But yet they hold a lot more power, especially in our modern times. So how do we do this? So up until Jimmy Carter, 1979, or Richard Nixon, he's the one who really started the one China policy, that you have to recognize one or the other, Taiwan or China. There's one China. They're not two nations, because China refuses to recognize Taiwan as an independent country. And so Nixon, when he opened the door to China and tried to create economic ties, he's the one who started to open the door to relations with communist China. And then Jimmy Carter in 1979, he was the one who definitively made the policy where mainland China, the communist China, is the one China, and that we would have informal relations with Taiwan. And that's been the policy up until what Donald Trump said the other day, in which he said, well, we don't need to, I'm not going to be bound by one China, the one China policy. And this is after he took the call from the Taiwanese prime minister. And he said that because he had a very definitive quote, and he said, I will not be dictated to by China. And so he has a pretty clear policy on that, and he laid out different things like China building military fortresses in the South China Sea, taking advantage of us economically, all these different things. And so a lot of people are upset that he would violate this rule, since it's the bedrock of our great relations with China. But obviously, there's a lot of disadvantages to that as well, since China is pretty much doing whatever we want, they want, and we're not stopping them.
Well, it's interesting. I think it seems like Donald Trump's words, at least, see what the actions are, but his words, at least, resonate with a lot of people that are kind of tired of the U.S. taking second place in a lot of these things. But there is something to be said for just being wise about maybe how you would do it, too. You know, you could say privately, hey, this is where we're leading to. We don't want China dictating to us. But to come out and say it, you know, publicly, what do you think? Is that a wise decision or not? Because, I mean, you do have to think about these other powers. We're not a self-contained entity here in the U.S. We do rely on other nations. You think a smart move or not a smart move?
Well, I think it's about time the U.S. president was stronger with China, since they hacked our systems, the U.S. government systems. They violate international law. They oppress their own people. There are a lot of things about China that we do need to stand up more, especially for our allies in Asia. However, the U.S. is not in a position where we have that strength to dictate to China as well. China holds most of our debt, and that's the main danger, is if they sell all the U.S. bonds, all of a sudden we have to pay up billions of dollars, and we don't have that money. So that's the main, they kind of hold us over a gun that economically, but also just militarily, the U.S. and China are pretty even. It depends what scenario you talk about, but we're not really in a military position where we can just dominate them like we used to, especially with the massive army and how modern it is. So I think on principles, Donald Trump is right to do this. It's about time a U.S. president stood up. However, when you look on paper, there is a much more wise policy to this. And it's more about letting your actions speak louder than your words. Actually doing things in the South China Sea, doing things in Asia that would strengthen our allies and give China a sign of, well, if you keep encroaching, we're actually going to do something about it. That's the kind of action we need. These kind of words, they just make Beijing angry, and they just cause a lot of division at home in the Republican Party and that kind of thing. So I think on principle, it's about time someone did it, but I think it's unwise, since the U.S. just isn't in a position to dominate China.
It's a really interesting sort of time period we're entering into here with a Trump presidency, because it's, well, for the last 8 years for sure, you can look at some of the policies and say, well, that's just really anti-U.S., the policies coming out of the U.S. But so now we see somebody that is more pro-U.S., obviously, and trying to raise the prominence of the U.S. in the world again. But yet we're kind of in this weird trap where maybe we can't. Like, it may be the right thing to do, but maybe it doesn't work out. Maybe you can't do it, or do it the way that they want to do it. So it's really interesting, and we've got a really good write-up on all of this, Russia and China in Prophecy. It's at thetrumpet.com, and it's revamped from years back. So if you've read it in the past, it's good to get it again if you don't have it, or if you had the older version. And it's interesting reading through that, and then you read some of these headlines, and it's all kind of in that realm, you know, because there is, if you read that book and you pair it up with some prophecies in the Bible, it talks about a siege, an economic siege coming, and that involves these Asian nations. It involves Europe. It involves the U.S. And so when you see the future or the president-elect being very strong here against one of those nations, all those words there in that that book and that are pulling from Bible prophecy, they really start to come alive. So it's pretty interesting to see some of this in the headlines.
We probably should have sided with Taiwan years ago instead, when we actually were in a position of strength with regard to China. Now we're trying to do it when we are in massive debt to them, and they basically are getting stronger than we are. Now we're trying to say that we'll stick up for Taiwan, which was our ally in World War II. Maybe not the best timing.
Well, and that kind of ties into our next story here that you have, Grant. This again is another deal that's been a bad deal, and now maybe we get out of it. From the Associated Press, Netanyahu says he hopes to work with Trump to undo the Iran deal.
Right. Mr. Netanyahu was seemingly overjoyed when Donald Trump was elected president. And in an interview with CBS's 60 Minutes last night, he said, "I think his attitude, his support for Israel is clear. He feels very warmly about the Jewish state, about the Jewish people. There's no question about that." That's an interesting comment from the leader of the Jewish state when so many people have been trying to brand Mr. Trump an anti-Semite and say that tons of his supporters are a bunch of racists. Well, not according to the leader of the Jewish state.
This will be interesting to see what they do. I would think most everyone thinks that that's a bad deal, that Iran deal. If there's somebody that thinks it's a good deal, I don't really know who it is outside of the press. Either of you guys seen any write-ups from anybody that's outside of the their little group that thinks it's a good deal?
Even Iran doesn't think it's a good deal. So I think that's, besides the liberal media, the Obama administration, and a few world leaders, I think like Justin Trudeau likes it. And like other more liberal leaders, Germany, a lot of European countries do support the nuclear agreement. I think all the G7 countries in Europe do support it. Besides them, I haven't seen anything.
Well, but even there, could somebody support it if it was true, if they actually weren't going to, you know, make weapons? I suppose, maybe. There's a lot of other issues there. They're sponsoring terrorism and so forth. But the fact that they're going to break it, they are breaking it. I think everybody kind of knows they are. That's the the bigger issue, right? I mean, on top of it being just a bad deal in the first place, they're not even keeping it, so.
And how many times have they directly threatened us since January 16th? I mean, it's just amazing that they keep on saying, well, we'll get more aggressive. We will attack your ships in the Gulf if you do anything that we might think is hostile toward us. They just keep on threatening us more and more directly, it seems, ever since the deal was finalized this year.
Do they have any details about how they would go about undoing this deal? Is it as simple as just saying, deal's over, get lost, or is there more legalities?
It seems like there are quite a few legalities to deal with, but Mr. Netanyahu said in that interview last night that he has about 5 different ways he could think of working with Mr. Trump to dismantle the deal. He wouldn't get into any detail. He doesn't want to have, you know, possibly Mr. Obama block those methods before he leaves office, something like that. So right now he does have to be quiet about his plans. But it would seem difficult if 6 other world powers or 7 other world powers who agreed to it would also seemingly have to agree to dismantle it.
Yeah, unless we kind of just say, nah, we're going to do our own thing,
yeah.
Which it kind of seems like we're in that mode of doing. And again, I mean, in some ways, maybe it is principally the right thing to do on principle, but yet if you spurn all of your agreements and all of your allies, I mean, it puts you in a weird spot, too. I shouldn't say allies, but people we've worked with, nations we've worked with.
Well, if I recall correctly, Iran didn't even sign the agreement.
We've just been pretending like they have.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. signed it, yeah. But Iran didn't even sign it. So I'm not even sure if it's a legal document then, because you could just void it if the other party didn't sign it. I don't know how that works, though, but if Iran didn't sign it, then there's no point in keeping it, because it's just a pointless document. But I did see also that Iran's foreign secretary threatened to wipe Israel off the map again this weekend. He was saying if Israel makes an anti-Iranian alliance, they're going to wipe Israel out or He was threatening that just this weekend again.
That's so funny because their existence is an anti-Israel existence. That they try to form, I don't know, I guess they have some alliances out there. They're all anti-Israel, and then they say, but if you dare form an anti-Iran alliance, we'll wipe you off the map, as if they wouldn't otherwise. They will as soon as they can, if they can. It's just a matter of they're not able to do it yet. So
it's almost comical that they would even make a threat like that toward Israel when Israel theoretically could go in there today and just wipe out every single one of their nuclear sites. Basically, all they need is America's approval to do that, and they could do it. And maybe that would be the best way to deal with it. Instead of actually dismantling the paper document, instead of tearing that up, why not just go bomb the sites when that should have been an option for the last 8 years but wasn't?
Yeah, you just go in there and bomb them and then say they must have had an accident.
Oops.
The plant blew up.
Well, I did see a story earlier this year. There's a lot of controversy surrounding it, but where Netanyahu did want to do that, or at least start putting in the motion, but his generals said, no, we shouldn't. And so he backed down.
And the world said no, too. That was another tough part.
Yeah, but he's willing to do it, though, especially with Iran getting those surface-to-air air missiles from Russia, the next generation defense technology. I mean, that would put a huge obstacle in the way because those type of missiles can shoot down the most advanced fighters and bombers.
Have they had many meetings yet since the election, Netanyahu and Trump?
I believe Mr. Netanyahu called Mr. Trump right after he won, and they probably talked maybe once or twice since then as well. So clearly, the relationship is going to change in some way. I mean, we've obviously been seeing America and Israel's alliance just disintegrate before our eyes the past 8 years. And on the surface, it just seems impossible for that to happen, or it makes no sense. But when we read a booklet like America Under Attack on the website, we can kind of see, you know, maybe why Mr. Obama wanted to do that.
Yeah, you can find that at thetrumpet.com. That's a really good write-up. There's three really good write-ups, Russia and China and Prophecy, Great Again and America Under Attack, all dealing with this time period we're in, things that are happening here in the U.S. and in other nations. And it'll be interesting to see if Mr. Netanyahu and Mr. Trump do try to work together to do something. Who knows? We'll see what happens here. Iran is king of the South, though. They kind of have their way, for now anyway.
We need to realize that clearly the Jewish state in the Middle East is the only state over there that has anything close to values that we might agree with here in the West. And yet we're so sympathetic toward all of these hostile, failed Arab states. That really needs to change. And maybe Mr. Trump has seen that and will try to change it in a way, but it might be too little too late.
Interesting to see. You can read the rest of this write-up. The Associated Press, Netanyahu says he hopes to work with Trump to undo the Iran deal. One other story today, not relevant, but kind of, well, I don't know, kind of funny, kind of not funny. There was over the weekend, there was a some sort of fight. I think it was a mixed martial arts fight. And the guy, and the reason it made news is because of what happened after the fight. The one guy thought he won. He had his hands all, you know, they're about to announce the winner. He has his hands raised in victory. And he didn't win. They called the other guy's name. It was on a score, I guess. And so, in frustration, he swings around and throws a punch, just kind of frustration. He punches the ring girl right in the face.
Oh, no.
But it doesn't knock her over. Like, it probably hurt, but she took it. And I thought, well, I guess that's probably why the guy didn't win.
I saw the video clip. She just had an iron jaw, didn't even feel it.
She wasn't expecting it. He hit her, and then it didn't even knock her down. So maybe he needs to find a new career. It was an accident. He didn't try to do it on purpose, but that's probably not a good omen. If
it was a full-on punch of rage,
yeah,
into what he thought was the air, but it was actually into that girl's face, and that tiny girl just ate it. No big deal.
Wow. Well, that doesn't say much for his career. I don't know if do you get sued for something like that? I mean, it was an accident, but still, that's pretty serious business.
We've seen it in the NBA where a guy will make the basket and get fouled, and he'll be celebrating that he's going to get the free throw, and he'll fist pump. I saw Carlos Boozer one time punch the referee right in the privates when he turned around, and the referee actually lifted his feet off the ground. He got punched so hard.
Yeah, you have to be careful with that. That you know what? Apparently I'm guilty of something like this years ago when I was a kid in grade school. I still don't know what happened, but it was a game of prison ball. Or that's what we called it anyway.
Type of dodgeball.
You get hit and you got to go to the prison. They throw the ball. If you catch it, you come back.
You have big iron chains around your legs running around.
Yeah, they were very serious about it back in the day. Well, anyway, I got out and I was, it's co-ed. We're all like third, fourth graders. And I'm walking to prison and this girl's kind of saying something to me and whatever. And so I jokingly like acted like I was going to, you know, take a swing at her. And then I'm sure that's all that happened, but she was crying. And then she, like, apparently she did get hit. But I don't think I did it. To this day, I'm like, I didn't do that though. But somehow I got blamed for it. So it can happen. It was an accident.
Isn't it weird when we enter alternate realities like that? Yeah. Where, like, to this day, I feel like I was accused wrongfully of something. And I'm wondering if I'm in the height of self-deception about what happened, or maybe I should have been vindicated but wasn't. It's just so confusing.
I have spent a lot of time thinking about my prison ball experience, because nothing, like my hand didn't hurt. There was no, I didn't feel, how could I? I was like, do I have like an iron fist that I don't know about?
And yet when everyone else is saying you did it, you start second guessing yourself.
Yeah, you're like, I think I did it, but I don't think I did.
You need to write a book that says I didn't do it. So just to vindicate yourself.
You should write a book saying if I did it, this is how.
Just send it to the one girl. She probably wouldn't remember. She's like, what are you talking about? I've played out all these scenarios. Like maybe she got hit by a ball shortly after that and then blamed me. Like I don't know. It can happen. You got to be careful when you're either celebrating or you're upset about losing, because things can happen.
There was an Arizona Cardinals kicker. He kicked like a 50-something yard field goal. He was celebrating and he twisted his ankle.
Right.
When he was jumping up and down.
Wait,
and
didn't he
spinning.
Tear his knee too? I thought he like landed maybe. Awkwardly injured, and even tore his knee.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got to be, you know, years later they're like, so you were a pro football player. Oh, yeah. How did your career end, you know? And it'd be interesting to see if he like makes up a story like, oh, it was a vicious hit, you know, it's blocking. And they go back to the video and it's because he was jumping around. It's just, pride comes before the fall, right? Sometimes immediately. Yeah. Before the fall.
Instant karma.
Just celebrate or lament internally. That's the lesson.
Just take it, because you can end up inadvertently causing problems. So that was kind of an interesting story over the weekend. Some of the things that are going on in this world. Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live today, 101.3 KPCG. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show coming your way. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turchin, and Abraham Blondeau, have a great rest of your Monday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.